Jai Om Vishnu Bhava Paramahansa Prabhupada Sarada Sushi Shimad Zvangu Shri Bhakti Sarada Sarasati Thakramana Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrindiki Jai Iskand Pounder Acharya Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Namacharya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prema Ghosri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gaur Bhakti Vrindiki Jai Sisi Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyam Sundara Kundagiri Gaudhan Ki Jai Shri Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jay, Shri Shri Navadvip Dham ki jay, Shri Shri Mayapur Dham ki jay, Shri Shri Mathura Dham ki jay, Shri Shri Jagannath Puri Dham ki jay, Shri Shri Uttara Dham ki jay, Tulasi Devi ki jay, Bhakti Devi ki jay, Gangamaya ki jay, Jamanamaya ki jay, Gaur Premanandi, Puri Nama Sankirtana ki jay, Shri Shri Brihatmadanga ki jay, Transcendental Prasad Distribution ki jay, Shri Shri Gonitaya ki jay, Shri Shri Travaksham Hanuman ki jay, Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jay, Shri Shri Bhakti Vedanta Manadama ki jay, Shamavira Bhakta Vrinda ki jay. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Story from Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace, Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, from 3rd Canto, 23rd chapter, verse number 6. So everyone will repeat. Kardama uvacha. Tushto Aam Adya Tava Manavi Manadaya Shushushaya Paramaya Paraya Cha Bhaktya Yo Dehinam Ayam Ativa Suri Sa Deho Navikshita Samuchita Kshapitum Mad Arte Kardama Uvacha Tushto Humadya Tabamana Bamana Daya Tushto Hamadya Tabamana Vimana Daya Shushu Shaya Paramaya Paraya Chabaktya Shushu Shaya Paramaya Paraya Chabaktya Yo dehi namaya mati vasuritsa deho
Yo dehi namaya mati
vasuritsa
deho
Na vekshita samuchita kshapitum madarte Na vekshita samuchita kshapitum madarte Kardama uvacha Tushto humadya tabamana vimana daya Shushu shaya paramaya paraya cha bhaktya Yo dehi namaya mati vasuritsa deho Na vekshita samuchita kshapitum madarte Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Kardama Muni said, O respectful daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, today I am very much pleased with you for your great devotion and most excellent loving service. Since the body is so dear to embodied beings, I am astonished that you have neglected your own body to use it on my behalf. Responsibly, Kardama Muni said, O respectful daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, it is indicated here that one's body is very dear, yet Devahuti was so faithful to her husband that not only did she serve him with great devotion, service and respect, but she did not even care for her own health. This is called selfless service. It appears that Devahuti had no sense pleasure even with her husband, otherwise she would not have deteriorated in health. Acting to facilitate Kardama Muni's engagement in spiritual elevation, she continually assisted him, not caring for her bodily comfort. It is the duty of a faithful wife and chaste wife to help her husband in every respect, especially when the husband is engaged in Krishna consciousness. In this case, the husband also amply rewarded his wife. This is not to be expected by a woman who is the wife of an ordinary person. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayana Namaskritam Naramna Chaivam Rotamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayat Nastapa Eshu Abhadresh Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki Om Aginati Manandasya Gananjana Sarakaya Chaksur Malitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Dharati Svabhantikam. In this case, the husband also amply rewarded the wife. This is not to be expected by a woman who is the wife of an ordinary person. I just reread the last two sentences of Prabhupada's purport. I'll read the verse again and then comment. Kardama Muni said, O respectful daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, today I am very much pleased with you for your great devotion and most excellent loving service. Today the body is so dear to embodied beings, I am astonished that you have neglected your own body to use it on my behalf. I guess I'm the third American to speak in a row in Bhagavatam class, so in Australia they call them septic tanks, yanks. I hope you'll forgive the accent. I'm sitting on the edge here because I have a little knee injury. Usually I like to sit in that kind of regular cross-legged position, but it's a little bit of a strain. There are some interesting lessons to be learned from this verse and purport. One thing is that Devahuti is showing that she can be very detached from her body and serve in such a way that she's almost carefree of the body. And this is something that is the characteristic of many great souls, that they work so hard in their devotional service that they are detached from the body and apparently have no awareness of the body. This is a description we find about Prahlad Maharaj, that he had no awareness of the body. And in descriptions of other great souls, we find sometimes they are avadutas. They don't seem to have any consciousness or awareness of the body. This was said of Bhishma, for example, when he was lying in the bed of arrows. Of course, he had the benediction that he could leave his body whenever he wanted. But he seemed not to have any concern for the material body. And there were Rishabdev and others who kind of, you know, wandered about, Jadbarat, seemingly completely oblivious to bodily functions, almost unconscious that there was anything to do with bodily concern. There was a time when Prabhupada was asked, I think it was in Bombay, it was an Indian audience anyway, and that question that was asked is probably not so relevant, or wasn't so relevant then as it would be today, but someone asked Prabhupada, what do you think about hell? And that's kind of a question that we might elaborate on a bit today. And we were hearing yesterday how yuktahara viharasya yuktakarma sastra shveshtasya, we have to be so balanced in how we eat, sleep, work, and conduct ourselves in our recreation. So that was the question. what is your movement, or what do you think of hell? And Prabhupada immediately said, no one is healthy, everybody is dying. A very stark, very heavy answer. But it was kind of funny, because the question was, you know, what do you think about? Well, actually, we don't care. Everybody, nobody's healthy, everybody's dying. So it's kind of a counter to getting overly concerned with, you know, what we think about our health, because our philosophy tells us we should come to the point of not being concerned about the material body. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is another person who, when we read his biography, we read that he was told by the doctors he shouldn't strain himself, he had a heart condition and so on, but he was completely oblivious, he didn't care, he was not concerned with those kinds of orders. He just went ahead as if nothing was there, and he said, I think it's quoted, that it's up to Krishna to determine when I will go or when I will not go. Another person that sometimes comes to mind when we think about this was Jayananda, who's one of our contemporaries. Jayananda worked very hard. Sometimes he stayed up many nights without sleep. Very often he would sleep 3 or 4 hours a night. And some people give the opinion that his early demise, his contraction of cancer and so on, was due to the fact that he was completely oblivious to the material body. He just didn't care what it was and what was going on. He just did whatever had to be done for Krishna. So this is a very good trait. On the other hand, we have the notion that Prabhupada was very ordered in everything he did. He took massage, he ate every day, he did things at a certain interval, he went for walks, and he was concerned that devotees, I think we heard yesterday in a class that it was written twice somewhere in the teachings of Prabhupada that we should sleep for 6 hours a day. So even though Prabhupada himself, he was the acharya and he established for Krishna consciousness many things that aren't so commonly done nowadays, 24-year-old sannyasis and many other things. He personally conducted the weddings in the early days. That Prabhupada was very austere. There's a story that when he was in New York once and all the devotees were going up or down in the elevator and they asked him that he should go to Hawaii, he should take it easy, his health wasn't good. And Prabhupada said, I want to die with my boots on, like Arjuna. So that was kind of the example he set, and we saw that he was translating right up until the very last moments. He was translating his books. It was just amazing, up until the last day or the last few hours. So he exhibited that kind of lack of concern, but on the other hand, he was very ordered in the way he said that if I didn't eat, if I don't go for my walks, and if I don't take my massages, I would die. So he wanted his disciples also to be very balanced and ordered in their yuktahara viharasi, yuktachestasa karmasu, their eating, sleeping, working, and as the Bhagavad Gita says, recreation, whatever exactly that means. Of course, our recreation is Harinam, right? Because when you exercise Harinam, you're practicing all the good things that the body needs to do to get exercised. Hatha yoga, jnana yoga, raja yoga, dhyana yoga, it's all there in bhakti yoga. So when you jump and dance and perspire in kirtan for many hours, all the bodily limbs are getting very nicely exercised. So you're practicing a form of hatha yoga at that time. So Devahuti is being glorified for being very devoted. And the key, of course, is to be very alert and very devoted to Krishna consciousness. And to, if one takes care of the body, to do so only so that one will not be overly concerned, won't be caught up in the nature of the body and be thinking about it and be meditating on it. Because the goal of life, actually, as we understand from Rupa Goswami, is to always remember Krishna, to not let a second go by when we're not thinking about Krishna, when we're not meditating on Krishna. And of course, this is not easily achieved, and it requires a great deal of practice and a great deal of meditation and concern and commitment. We hear about how the gopis were, even when Krishna wasn't there, of course they thought about him when he was there, but they would see Krishna everywhere. Sometimes they would look at the tamal tree, and the tamal tree is darkish in color and has a sort of curved form which reminds the gopis of the curved form of Shamsundar, the threefold beautiful curved form of Krishna standing and playing his flute. And sometimes the gopis would cry, very often they would cry, when Krishna was not present. And this crying, Prabhupada said, was no different than their laughing and enjoying, because it was all for Krishna. It was all very deep meditation on Krishna. So they would see this tumultuary from sometimes a distance, and they would actually think it was Krishna. And Radharani quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada, in one of the purports, mentions that she says to her compatriots, to her friends, her associates, that when I leave my body, I want you to drape my hands around the tumult tree so that I can be meditating on Krishna in my last moments. So the gopis were always thinking, even when Krishna was away, they were deeply meditating on how he's running in through the fields and he may be stepping on sharp stones, maybe hurting his feet. So they were always in anxiety. Every second they were thinking whether he was there, and when he was there they were always thinking about him because he was there and they saw him and they heard him. But when he was not there, they were always thinking of him, constantly, nonstop. So in this is the mood of pure devotional service, to always be thinking of Krishna and never forgetting Krishna, not even for a second. And then one can come to the stage of prema and bhakti and bhava and loving Krishna and wanting to be serving the divine couple Radha and Krishna as a manjari or a resident of Vrindavan, or somehow serving them always. Of course, we serve them by fulfilling Krishna's desire. Krishna desires that Yaidam Paramam Bhuyam, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that there is no one more dear to me than one who is practicing preaching, who is enlivening, who is widening the circle of Krishna consciousness, who is sharing the secret with others. So in that way we're also very intimately serving the divine couple, serving the desires of Krishna and Radharani. So this is another very intimate way of associating with Krishna, by promoting him, his teaching, by being very committed to that process, to preaching. It's been said that without preaching there is no life, and if one doesn't preach, one is a dead man. So the preaching spirit is one of the things that Prabhupada meant to and give us when he said that I want to die with my boots on, that this preaching runs parallel with purifying ourselves internally. And of course it's complementary. The more we preach, the more we purify ourselves, and the more we purify ourselves, the more we want to preach. So these two things are mutually complementary. They help each other. So other things to be understood from this verse about is that one should be devoted to one we regard to be superior to us. And we were talking the other day about how the demigods like Lord Shiva can be worshipped, and how there's a seat in a temple in Soho Street for Lord Shiva. This is something very novel. I didn't know about this. But when we first came to England, we were sort of missionaries in 1968. Prabhupada immediately said, one of you must go to Oxford and start a temple there. He was very eager to have a temple there. So I dutifully went up there on a train one morning and looked at a church. So Prabhupada then came up to see the church. It was Catholic church with a dome on it, and the key was about this long. I remember it was one of those real old buildings, and when he looked at it, he was kind of pointing at the things with his cane, and he said, well, over here on this side we can have a picture of Jesus Christ and we can keep it in the temple. So it's like kind of shocking, controversial thing that Prabhupada said we could have a picture of Jesus Christ in Hare Krishna temple, but he did say it. The idea was that people like Jesus Christ, like Lord Shiva, like Lord Brahma, they can be worshipable, just like we can worship each other, because we're Vaishnavas. And as long as Lord Shiva, as we know, is the greatest of Vaishnavas, we can worship Lord Shiva with the idea of ultimately it going to Krishna, and Krishna being the ultimate object of our worship. So as we were hearing also in the class, I think on Sunday, Giriraj Maharaj was speaking about how we worship Krishna through his devotees. And he mentioned the Padma Purana, Yeme Bhakta Jana Parta, Yeme Bhakta Jana, that Krishna says to Arjuna, to Parta, that one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee, but one who claims to be the devotee of my devotee, that person I consider to be my devotee. So worship of those who are representing Krishna in some way or other, like Kardama Muni, who is a very, very exalted person, is very beneficial for our spiritual life, to to worship people that we consider more advanced than we are. Very, very important to us. And sometimes even we worship others. There were some very nice verses or very nice references cited in the last 2 days in class. One of them was Lord Shiva's direction, his declaration, Lord Shiva himself, that it is Aradhananam Sarvesham, Vishnu Aradhananam Param. When he was asked what's the highest form of worship, he said that worship of Vishnu is the highest, but to worship things connected with Vishnu is even higher. So that means all the devotees. That means the tulsi plant. That means the peacock feather. It can even be worshipped. Everything connected with Krishna, the temple grounds, the graffiti on the walls in Vrindavan that has Krishna's names can be worshipped. The ground that Krishna walked on, the sands of Ramanreti can be worshipped. The books are like deities. They can be worshipped. The teachings of Srila Prabhupada, they can be worshipped. Harinam, the holy name, that can be worshipped. It's respected. Prasadam can be worshipped. You know, we see people sometimes bowing down prasadam. As Vipra Mukhi was saying the other day, how in Chaturmasa people, they put their hands behind their back and they just lick up the cardboard box-like tasting combination of dog's rice. But it's actually a form of worship, and we heard that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to do that during Chaturmasa, that he would put his hands behind his back and just take a few bites a day, lick it off the cement floor, all in rice combination. So prasadam is worshipped in that way. So everything is worshipable by Krishna. And when Prahlad Maharaj in his maturity came across an avaduta, this avaduta was just lying on the ground, a great soul. Like Judd Bharat was kind of like that. You know, he didn't talk to people, he just kind of kept to himself. So he asked this avaduta, what instruction do you have for me? Supposed to get instruction from advanced devotees. So he said that, well, Guru Tamas, he called them Guru Atamas, or Uttama Gurus, the very most excellent gurus, he called them, were the bee and the python. And he studied them. He said he just would lie there like the python, because the python would just lie and wait for food to come into its mouth, whether they be insects or rats or whatever they eat. But without endeavoring, it would just take whatever Krishna provided. And the bee, because the bee would only take whatever it needed and it would fly away, it would get some pollen from the flowers and fly away. It wouldn't hoard or store anything. So he said, these are excellent gurus. So there's also a conversation, I want to read a couple of passages, from the Uddhava Gita, from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where another avaduta says that he has 24 gurus that he looks up to. And there are the wind, the water, the arrow maker, and so on. So I'm going to read a couple of passages just to give an idea about how there's something to learn from everyone. And when it is said that everyone should become guru, it also means that we can learn, of course the word guru is now in the English dictionaries, it means teacher, instructor. But a devotee learns from all experiences, all failures. I think Srila Bhakti Saraswati said that the pillars are failures are the pillars of success, something like that. So there's something to learn. So I want to just read a couple of make sure. Thank you. So the avaduta is saying to the king, King Yadu, I've taken shelter of 24 gurus, not one, not two, not three, but 24, who are the following: the earth, air, sky, water, fire, moon, sun, pigeon and python, the sea, moth, honeybee, elephant, and honey thief, the deer, the fish, the prostitute Pingala, the Kurara bird, and the child, the young girl, arrow maker, serpent, spider, wasp. My dear king, by studying their activities, I have learned the science of the self. So I won't have time to go into all of these, but just to talk about some. This is very worthwhile reading.
because it gives us an idea of how one can see Krishna everywhere and learn from all of the different elements in Krishna's creation, or many of them. So, the earth. A sober person, even when harassed by other living beings, should understand that his aggressors are acting helplessly under the control of God, and thus he should never be distracted from progress on his own path. This rule I have learned from the earth, and the purport is, the earth is the symbol of tolerance. By deep oil drilling, atomic explosions, pollution, and so on, the earth is constantly harassed by demoniac living entities. Sometimes lush forests are cut down by greedy men with commercial interests, and thus a wasteland is created. Sometimes the earth's surface is soaked by the blood of soldiers fighting in savage warfare. Yet despite all these disturbances, the earth continues to provide all the necessities of living beings. In this way, one may learn the art of tolerance by studying the earth. Very instructive. And these purports, by the way, were written by, not by Prabhupada, by Hridayananda Maharaj and his team of translators. So this is another instance where we can see that Prabhupada empowered his disciples to give very insightful and illuminating commentary on the Bhagavatam, and they continue very nicely in the wake of his teachings. A saintly person, this is the 38th text, I'm reading from the 7th chapter of the 11th canto. A saintly person should learn from the mountain to devote all his efforts to the service of others and to make the welfare of others the sole reason for his existence. This is the verse. Similarly, as the disciple of the tree, he should learn to dedicate himself to others. And this is the purport. Great mountains bear unlimited quantities of earth, which in turn give sustenance to innumerable forms of life such as trees, grass, birds, animals, and so on. Mountains also pour forth unlimited quantities of crystalline, what do you say in England? Line? Crystalline. In the United States we say crystalline. I told you, you have to bear with a strange accent. Crystalline water in the form of waterfalls and rivers, and this water gives life to all. By studying the example of mountains, one should learn the art of providing for the happiness of all living entities. Similarly, one may take excellent lessons from the pious trees, who offer innumerable benefits such as fruits, flowers, cooling shade, and medicinal extracts. Even when a tree is suddenly cut down and dragged away, the tree does not protest, but continues to give service to others in the form of firewood. Thus, one should become the disciple of such magnanimous trees and learn from them the qualities of saintly conduct. As many of you know, trees are hugged and bowed down to in India. They're worshipped. And banyan trees in particular. You've probably seen how banyan trees grow through houses and walls sometimes because people won't cut them down. In the West, as soon as they start to form new roots, they're cut off. They don't know what they are, but they don't worship them. But they're considered to be very sacred. In fact, the Krishna Balaram tree, which I'm sure many of you have seen, how many have seen that tree? Yeah, that tree, I asked Unabandhu once how that tree got its name, and I thought that it was there for a long time, you know, many decades or centuries even, wherever, before the Krishna Balaram temple was set up. But then I asked others who lived there for some time, and they said that, no, that this tree only came to be called the Krishna Balaram tree since the Krishna Balaram Mandir was set up. So, as you know, it's a Sami tree, the darker tree, and what's the top one? A people tree. It's a white tree. And so that white tree is meant to represent Balaram, the dark tree is meant to represent Krishna. The people routinely now, as they start the Prakram path, as they start the walk, they bow down to that tree, they circumambulate that tree, they hug the tree, they touch their forehead to that tree. And there are many other combinations of trees like that. Of course, that's a unique tree because the people tree is growing out of the Sami tree. But there are other instances where the Kadamba trees are growing out of small trees and they represent Radha Krishna. You see them on the Parikram path. And Lord Chaitanya also talked about being more tolerant than the tree. And as we're reading here, the tree is a symbol of many things. It's a symbol of giving, it's a symbol of when it's full of fruits and flowers. Prabhupada once told us how it's bent over in a gesture of humility, because it's got a lot to give. And in the wintertime, when the leaves and flowers and fruits are not there, it tends to be erect, and that's a symbol of some individual who is very proud of, but doesn't have anything to give. So in other words, pride means that there is nothing to give, and humility means there is a lot to give. So the tree is a very important symbol, and as Lord Chaitanya said, the tree is a symbol of tolerance. It's cut for wood. The trees and the leaves are picked in India. People are very careful about picking leaves and fruits and flowers during the nighttime because they know that the trees can have feelings. And they say that if you pick it at night, you'll startle the tree by waking it up. So they don't pick the flowers at night or leaves or fruits. And then the tree gives shade all the time. And when there's great wind and rain, snow and hail, the tree doesn't make any protest. So the tree is a great symbol of tolerance. And sometimes people are carving into the tree things in the West. They have a tendency to carve initials and so-and-so loves so-and-so with an arrow and through a heart and all that. They do that here? They must. And you never hear the tree protesting. Now, the tree doesn't protest. And it provides fuel. It provides so many things. Sap, fruits, flowers. Never protest. According to Srila Madhvacharya, the word Harartaikanta Sambhava indicates that one should dedicate all of one's wealth and other assets to the welfare of others. By one's acquired opulence, one should especially try to please the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus demigods, as well as all truly respectable superior personalities, will automatically be pleased. By developing saintly conduct, as described in this verse, one will become tolerant, and this will free one from the useless agitation of the material senses, which drive one to wander throughout the world, searching in vain for material happiness. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also emphasized the tree's quality of tolerance, taror iva sahishnuna kirtani aksadakari. One who is as tolerant as a tree can chant the holy name of Krishna constantly, finding every new satisfaction. There's a story in this regard. There's a colleague of Srila Prabhupada's named Mr. Kapoor. He's still somewhat known throughout Vrindavan. He's a disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So we went to see him a few years ago. And then we asked him questions about what was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur like, what did he look like, how did he sound, did he have a deep voice, you know, what did he, how did he sit, how did he walk, how did he comport himself. And he was remembering a lot of things about him. It was very nice. So he knew Prabhupada. They were god brothers and friends. And when Prabhupada, before he was sannyas, he called him Abhai, and then later on Abhai Babu. So Prabhupada told him when he was still a householder that Kapoorji said, I'm going to go to the West someday. After this was after he met his spiritual master, and he said that I'm going to preach Krishna consciousness in the West. He said, really? How are you going to do that? He said, well, I have a secret formula, but I won't tell you what it is right now. So later, after Prabhupada took sannyas and he was staying at the Pradhanamadhar temple, Kapoor happened to come into the temple. And he saw Prabhupada, but he didn't recognize him because some time had passed, 15 or 20 years, and Prabhupada was shaved up and a little thin. So he didn't notice. So then he looked at, Prabhupada saw him. He said, Kapoorji. And Dr. Kapoor said, Abhai. He looked at him and he recognized his face. Abhai Babu. He said, yes, it's you. And then he told him the whole story, how he decided to take sannyas, and he was writing Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was going to go to the West. He said, yes, I remember you told me you were going to go. But you didn't tell me what your secret was. You said you had a secret formula that was going to enable you to preach in the West. And now maybe you can tell me since so much time has gone by. So Prabhupada said, yes, I will tell you. And my secret is, Trinadapi Sunichena Toro Eva Sahishana Manida Manadena Kirtani Aksarakari. And that was his secret formula. This is what Dr. Kapoor told us. The Prabhupada's formula was that he would be very tolerant, very humble, like the tree, and not want respect from anyone and offer respect to all others. So this is a very important quality for devotees to develop, the quality of tolerance and humility. So that was what Prabhupada said was his secret of being successful, of going to be successful in the West. So there are many other gurus. I mentioned them all. Maybe I'll read one more and then we can have some questions. Although a self-realized soul may live in various material bodies while in this world experiencing their various qualities and functions, he is never entangled, just as the wind, which carries various aromas, does not actually mix with them. Purport. Although we experience the wind as fragrant or foul, depending on the aroma it carries, the wind does not, in fact, change its actual nature. Similarly, says the purport, although we regard a particular person as strong or weak, intelligent or retarded, beautiful or homely, good or bad, the pure spirit soul, who is the actual person, does not really possess any of the qualities of the body, but is merely covered by them, just as the wind is covered by different aromas. Thus, a Krishna-conscious person is always aware that he is different from the temporary body. He experiences the various transformations of the body, such as childhood, adolescence, adulthood, and old age, but although he experiences the pains, pleasures, qualities, and functions of that body, a Krishna-conscious person never thinks that he is that body. He is the body. He always understands that he is an eternal spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna. As stated in this verse, Nayujite Yogi, he is not entangled. The conclusion is that one should never consider a Krishna-conscious person in terms of bodily designations, which would see him as an eternal servitor of the Lord. So this is from the 11th canto, part 1. And this book is available up in the membership office, Sitaram. Is that where it is? Okay. And maybe there's two of them there. There's two down here. So I'll read the verse again and then we can have some questions. Kardama uvacha tushto ham adyatava ma'anava. Manavi manadaya shushu shaya paramaya paraya cha bhaktya yo dehi namaya madiva suritsa deho na ekshitasa mujita kshabitu mararte. Kardama Muni said, O respectful daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, today I am very much pleased with you for your great service, for your great devotion, not service, for your great devotion and most excellent loving service. Since the body is so dear to embodied beings, I am astonished that you have neglected your own body to use it on my behalf. So, some comments or questions? Kali Pani?
I was wondering what the maybe all the Krishna-conscious philosophy is ornamental body.
Krishna-conscious philosophy is on?
The philosophy on ornamental gardening.
Ornamental gardening.
In order to have a nice garden,
he says it's rarely achieved because when a Krishna gives someone devotional service, he's giving himself actually, because he becomes controlled by the love of the devotee. So naturally, when you're giving that much, you make sure that that's you're giving it to the right person. So we have a price. That is to say, Anya Amilas Vashunya Jnana Bhagavanya we are. So we get tested by the illusory potency. Prabhupada said that the banker's task of the illusory potency is to make sure that no rascals enter into the kingdom of God. I mean, that's why it's a nice place. You know, that everybody who would cause a disturbance is here. That's why the kingdom of God is the kingdom of God. Everybody there is all of the same mentality. So, we want Krishna consciousness, and it's offered to us on a silver platter. And then Maya says, sure you want this? How about this? And you get some little, you know, gaudy little bauble in the material world. We have to say, no. So we have to pass the test of the spiritual master. Okay. Thank you. That's the only two I know of. Yeah, I'm just not praying much about. I bet you there's more. You've got to have folio that does parts of words for us.
I was wondering if you thought any kind of indication that Prabhupada was interested in that conference to replace it with one.
It's my conviction that he was. He never made those claims for himself. This description sounds to me like a description of a realized wisdom. And it explains it to us so nicely and easy to understand. That's a wonderful thing. I mean, you take this verse and then Prabhupada just goes deeper and deeper into the mystery. Well, I've heard stories, you know. I remember once where Prabhupada was one time the devotees Prabhupada was seemed to have some very good problem. Brought a doctor. You've got to take care of him. He has diabetes. Just died. So the doctor said, you have diabetes. I have Krishna. So. Once he was on the standing on the steps of Boston campus, it's winter time, and he was over there in Boston, winter, having a totally hospitable view of life. The boy was standing next to Boston, all the way to the beautiful day. So we have to have, when the vision is there, there's nothing but Krishna. It's seeing Krishna. There's no miserable days. It's just varieties.
Yeah. You said that you get very nice illustration of the spiritual world. It's not a place of disturbance.
Not a place of?
It's not a place of disturbance.
Of disturbance, yes.
And anyone who creates disturbance wants to create disturbance right here. But somehow or another, we got disturbed when we were there. And that's why we are here. So how come there is a disturbance?
How come there is a disturbance? Well, it's a little difficult to understand. And Prabhupada tells us that somehow or other we've lost the consciousness. Do the material scientists believe there is such a thing as a Big Bang? If you look at the Big Bang theory, it's also totally incomprehensible to believe it because they can find traces of it, they say. So, otherwise, you can't come forward. So I know what the disturbance was. Each of grace is something that one of them in their heart. It says we come into this world because we are contaminated by the duality of desire and hate. And one place it says the original desire and hate are directed toward Krishna. And the original desire is, why can't I be God? And the original hate is, why should Krishna be God? And so if I look deep into my heart, there it is. I don't remember. I can't trace out when it began. Any of that stuff. Boy, it's there. Why can't I be God? I'll tell you, when it came to me, undisguised form, a tape. And on this tape, Srila Prabhupada was talking to an Indian gentleman who was probably from Kerala because he had been converted to Christianity. Good Christian. And he was saying to Prabhupada, because the way Indian people get converted to Christianity is by hearing Krishna blasting. So he said to Prabhupada, how can you worship a God who is an adulterer? Prabhupada said, Krishna is not an adulterer. You are the adulterer. All women belong to Krishna. And when I heard that, you know, I thought it was a great answer to him, you know, but when I heard that, I felt this stab in my heart. And I recognized what it was. I was envious of Krishna, you know, because why does he, you know, no women for me? Because, you know, if you're grown up a male, in a male body in the West, you at least think of all women as potentially enjoyable.
Both directly and indirectly. Must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. Can I repeat? A person who is searching.
A person who is searching.
After the Supreme Absolute Truth.
After the Supreme Absolute Truth.
The personality of Godhead.
The personality of Godhead.
Must certainly search for it up to this.
Must certainly search for it up to this.
In all circumstances.
In all circumstances.
In all space and time.
In all space and time.
Both directly and indirectly.
Both directly and indirectly.
So that's the last verse of his Chatra Sloki. The four seed verses of the Bhagavatam. There's a few more pages in the book. Even during the annihilation of the material world, the process of bhakti yoga can be applied. Kalena nashta pralaya vaniyam. The Lord is worshipped in devastation because He protects the Vedas from being annihilated. He is worshipped in every millennium or yuga, as is stated in the 12th canto, 3rd chapter, verse 52. Kriteya jayato Vishnu, Tretayam yajato mukha, Dvapare paricharyayam, Kalotat arikirtanat. In the Vishnu Purana it is written, Sahanistan Mahachidram Samohaksa Chabibrama Yan Muhurtam Chanambhati Vasudevam na chintayet. If even for a moment remembrance of Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, is missed, that is the greatest loss. That is the greatest illusion, and that is the greatest anomaly. The Lord can be worshipped in all stages of life. For instance, even in the wombs of their mothers, Maharaj Prakrit and Maharaj Prahlad worshipped the Lord. Even in his very childhood, at the age of only 5 years, Dhruva Maharaj worshipped the Lord. Even in full youth, Maharaj Ambarish worshipped the Lord. And even in the last stage of frustration and old age, Maharaj Dhritarashtra worshipped the Lord. Ajamya worshipped the Lord even at the point of death. And Chittaketu worshipped the Lord even in heaven and hell. In the Narsingha Purana, it is said that as hellish inhabitants begin to chant the holy name of the Lord, they begin to be elevated from hell towards heaven. I was in London when Srila Prabhupada was on television, right? And they asked him if devotees go to hell to preach, and Prabhupada said, isn't London hellish? So the headline the next day said, Swami says London is hellish. Anyway, it says here that the people in hell can even, the hellish inhabitants, they can chant and then they get elevated. Dhruva, Durvas Muni had also supported this view. Mucheva yan namni udite nadakopi. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, the inhabitants of hell became released from their hellish persecution. So the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam is given by Sukadev Goswami to Maharaj Prakrit as follows. Etavan etan nirvidyamananam ichchatam akuto bhayam yoginam nipa nirnitam harer naman ukirtanam. O King, it is finally decided that everyone, namely those in the renounced order of life, the mystics, and the enjoyers of fruitive work, should chant the holy name of the Lord fearlessly to achieve the desired success in their pursuits. Second Canto, chapter 1, verse 11. That's an often referred to verse, but that is the conclusion of the Bhagavatam that is in many, many other places in the Bhagavatam. One should chant the holy name of the Lord. Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranita. And there's so many verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita which are saying that there's no other way than chanting. Lord Chaitanya is always expanding on this Harinama verse. In this age, it's the only religious principle is chanting the holy name, Vaishnava principles. And that is the highest truth. So then, Prabhupada listing here more references. Number one, even if one is well versed in all the Vedas and scriptures, if he is not a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is considered to be the lowest of mankind. Sometimes you see people, they know a lot of scriptures, they know the Vedas, but they're not devotees. So they're actually, it's not exalted position. They've misunderstood. Even worse if someone has been exposed to all that and still doesn't accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they're Pashandi. In the Garuda Purana, Brihannaradita Purana, and Padma Purana, it is the same as repeated. What is the use of Vedic knowledge and penances for one who is devoid of devotional service to the Lord? Three, what is the comparison of thousands of Prajapatis to one devotee of the Lord? Four, Shukadeva Goswami said, 2nd Canto, chapter 4, number 17, that neither the ascetic, nor one who is greatly munificent, nor one who is famous, nor the great philosopher, nor the great occultist, nor anyone else can achieve the desired result without being engaged in the service of the Lord. Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita also, right? Not by charity, not by penance, not by knowledge, not by anything except bhakti. Bhakti mama bijananti. In this way one can come to Krishna. All these other things, they're part and parcel of bhakti yoga. Automatically, the devotee is a little bit austere and he's the most munificent. Buddhida janaha. Bhuvigrinantiye buddhida janaha. The one who distributes this knowledge, he's the most munificent. This Krishna katha, tavakatamritam, tavakajivana. That this nectarine katha is the only relief for the souls who are burning up in this material world. And one who distributes this, he's the most munificent. Srila Prabhupada always said that the devotee is the greatest welfare worker. This is the highest welfare work. People have an inclination towards welfare work, pious people. So if they just would add Krishna to their welfare work, then everything would be glorious. But otherwise, just patching up this material world and shuffling a little bit of sense gratification around, it's not, even materially they find doesn't do much good. The mundane statement is they have something like, give a man a fish, I think the Chinese say, or Gandhi said, or something. And you can eat, he can eat for one day, but you give him, teach him how to go fishing, and then he can, then he are taken care of. Or you give a man some rice, but if you teach him to grow rice, then he's much better off. So if you give someone Krishna, then their life becomes useful. Otherwise, they may go on living a little bit longer, but they don't get. They just take birth again.
They can uproot some plants or cut some trees or cut the grass or whatever, and that seems to be an avarat. There are there's a sect of Jains that sometimes wear, I've been to meetings where they wear a thing that looks like a surgical mask, because they know that when you breathe, you kill living entities. It's also a fact that, and they don't want to do that, they're very nonviolent. Also, it's a fact that when we walk, we're stepping on living entities. So whether we're breathing or walking, we're killing living entities. Of course, ornamental gardening is a more active form of acting. I mean, it's a more proactive thing. So there's a couple of different things we can look at. You're asking what the philosophy is. And it's kind of more the Siddhanta, because a philosophy is generally the philosophy of ahimsa, of nonviolence. But we know there was a Kurukshetra war, and it doesn't mean that violence is always condemned. Prabhupada sometimes criticized Mohandas Gandhi because his principle was nonviolence in all spheres, including political. But he said that it was due to Subhash Chandra Bose that India was able to become independent. And then he criticized Mohandas Gandhi for, he preached nonviolence, but he died by violence. So the idea is that sometimes violence is necessary. We read in the Bhagavad Gita that there are six times when violence can be enacted. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also was known for saying that cobras are very dangerous and they can be killed. And Prabhupada said it was okay to have cats, teeth, rats in the temple here. So although the philosophy and the Siddhanta is generally non-violent, the Siddhanta is that sometimes invariably and inevitably we will kill other living entities. But the saving factor, the saving grace, literally grace, is that we chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It is said in the Brahma Samhita and in the Nectar of Devotion that by engaging in devotional service constantly, we neutralize more sinful activities. We take them away. We take away the reactions of more sinful activities than we can actually commit. As Chinna Gopamata Vendrama Hosva Karma stated in the Brahma Samhita, that because Krishna is the controller of all the good things and the bad things that happen to everyone, from starting from the lowest Indra Gopa up to Indra or Brahma himself, if one engages in devotional service to that personality of Godhead, then all the karmic reactions, all the different karmas that would accrue to us by breathing, by stepping, by cutting, they will be taken away. All those sinful reactions will be taken away. So part of making a beautiful place for Krishna, a beautiful place for people to come to Krishna consciousness, is making a very beautiful temple and keeping the rats out, keeping the garden nice. And Prabhupada gave the example by his own life that preaching very often, sometimes has to supersede the fact that sinful activity will be committed. He even told some devotees that if they had to do it, if there was no other food to eat, they could even eat meat by offering it to Lord Krishna, so that they could live in order to preach Krishna consciousness. He wrote a couple of devotees' letter like that. So sometimes it will be necessary to do violence, although one doesn't like violence to other living entities. Sometimes it will be necessary. It's a big question. Yes? Do I need to repeat this question to people who aren't in the room or getting this on the microphone? Kitchen or any place else? Did everyone hear his question? Okay. One of the verses in the Bhagavatam, it's in the fifth canto, one of Lord Rishabhdev's teachings, is that how one should not pita nasyat syat jana nasyat, you know, the verse, famous verse, one shouldn't become father and mother, worshipable demigod, a spiritual master, a husband, unless one can deliver one's dependence from death. So the first thing is one should not take on a position of being able to be worshipable in any form, I mean an official position like that, unless one is prepared to undergo whatever is necessary to deliver one's dependence from death, to liberate them, to make them Krishna conscious. So there's a great danger. As we value relationships consciously or unconsciously, in childhood we look to our parents for everything. As we grow a little older, it's our friends. As we grow a little older, it's boyfriend or girlfriend, or husband or wife, and whatever it may be. There's always role models, and there's always relationships. So there's a tendency for us to be over the top, so to speak, in a relationship, and just think that this person is to be all and end all. As in the material world, sometimes people, they don't recover from the death of a husband or wife or son or daughter or mother or father or dear friend. They just don't recover. They just go into deep depression and they can't pull out of it. So there's a kind of attachment that sometimes develops like that, we worship a particular devotee who's representing Krishna, you know, in some way or other. And that is a kind of Rupa Goswami talks about shadow attachment. It can be based on personality, it can be based on looks, it can be based on sound of the voice, it can be based on so many things that aren't the real depth of commitment to wanting pure love of Godhead and remembering Krishna at every moment. So if that kind of worship is there, it's not really worship, it's a kind of shadow attachment or a kind of sentimental way of relating with someone that can be very dangerous. Because it's not really based on Krishna. In other words, one who is taking that position of being a mentor to someone else, teaching someone else, should understand that Krishna is actually the ultimate teacher and the ultimate purifier. And if that person is in a position of spiritual master, they should realize that Krishna is going to purify all the karma, that if I try to take it on myself, then it's not transparent, it's stopped. So everything actually has to emanate from the Supreme Lord, and we all have to be transparent via media for Krishna's teachings. We're just following the books, we're following the teachings, we're following what Krishna wants. And if we try to somehow be the teacher, the be-all and end-all, then there's great danger. And to worship is also, like you said, like you queried, it can be very dangerous because we can put our faith in such person and then be disappointed that that person hasn't really burnt out all the deep desires in the heart, and then we're sort of left if we put all of our faith in just one individual, then we run the risk of being left as orphans, so to speak. So we have to be careful. Therefore, Prabhupada is very much at the center. He's the Acharya. Acharya means one who established something very big and great. And Prabhupada is our Shiksha Guru for everyone, really. And the more we understand that, the easier it is to understand that we're all potentially at least fallible human beings. And so there's definitely some danger. We have to be very careful and know that whatever or whoever we worship is actually very deeply connected with Krishna. And as I was saying before, there are many different spiritual masters. Even the wind and the sea and the mountains and the trees are spiritual masters. So we can worship all devotees and everything connected with Krishna. So I think we have time for one more. Yes. Sally Agarwal wrote a letter to Prabhupada, and he liked the letter because in the letter she said that her daughter referred to Prabhupada as Swami Jesus. And Prabhupada liked that because he wrote her back and said that, I think there's a saying, from the mouth of babes from jewels of wisdom or something like that. He was very happy that this child saw him as such a great spiritual personality. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
doing all the things all at once. And he was very enthusiastic to get his followers to give Krishna to everyone. After we've traveled Brahmati, Bhumati, Bhagyavanji, all over the different universes, taking birth in so many different species of life, trying to enjoy maybe all different kinds of fruitive activities, all kinds of sense gratification, maybe studying the Vedas, doing austerities, penance, maybe being merciful, who knows, everything. Prabhupada said, you've had so many births. But then, Guru Krishna Prasade Boy, Bhakti Lata Beej, by the mercy of Krishna, one gets a guru. And then by the mercy of guru, one gets Krishna. So this is the same purpose, Lord Chaitanya, but he didn't kill any demons, but he did annihilate the demoniac mentality by the kirtan. People would change, and this is still going on, especially now, very strongly, all over the world. So many people are taking up Vaishnava principles, even unknowingly. More and more people are not eating meat or not smoking or trying to respect the animals or not destroy the environment. You get a little glimpses of, you know, Krishna consciousness because the potency is spreading, but so many people are actually becoming full-time devotees and giving up all sense gratification, chanting the holy name of the Lord and opening temples and distributing books and so many languages and so many numbers, just like Srila Prabhupada said, just distribute these books in as many as possible, in as many languages as possible, and Krishna consciousness will automatically spread all over the world. So we're finding, one devotee in Soho said, they meet so many like older people. They say, oh yeah, I got those books, and we have any new ones, I'm reading them. And we don't meet these people very much, or somehow or other, because they're all spread out and they're busy, but we can't imagine how many people there are actually, because all these books have been distributed, so somebody's reading them. So many people are, and they're being influenced, and they're taking up the principles. Or in Japan, they're making up their own religions based on our books. One guy already did that. I found one book and it was full of our pictures. I said, what is this book? I said, oh, this guy made up his own religion. It's like mostly Krishna conscious, but he's added, I don't know, you know, because none of the devotees studied it. So that's happening everywhere. Even the Christians you find, I saw in America, they don't give any credit, but they're using all Prabhupada's arguments and examples that, you know, they never used before. At least I never heard of it. And even I saw one who's talking about, you know, the cosmology, and he was saying exactly what we say, only saying, only the Bible says this, only Jesus explains this. And it doesn't, you know. But he somehow must have read, you know, our version. And, you know, they're very strict now, God is a person. I mean, before, when we said God is a person, almost all of the Christians would argue, no, the Spirit, something else, something you can't see. But it, and I used to meet these preachers in America a long time ago, these evangelists, and they said, yeah, I read those books, you know, I want to know, because they see that it's powerful, so they study Prabhupada's books to give arguments, to find out how to preach, but then they preach their own thing. But slowly then the principles are becoming accepted. Vegetarianism, no animal killing, and intoxication even. Although things are getting worse and worse because it's Kali Yuga, so many people are stepping aside and locking Kali out by chanting the holy name, by following the regulated principles. And Kali is becoming very frustrated, so you see he's making increased efforts to advertise illicit sex and to advertise gambling and intoxication and meat eating. They have a big billboard in Florida, and it said meat, beef, the new health food. They're desperate, you know. But when they do something so stupid that people laugh, you know, they make it more unlikely. It becomes, they can't think of it. They think desperately how to attract people. Except meanwhile, there's so many doctors saying it's unhealthy. So you can't directly tell just everybody the cow is your mother and, you know, make them stop eating meat. But when they're telling them it's not healthy, somehow or other, the same result is coming. It's chicks. So we should become convinced. Prabhupada said, I'm convinced and you should be convinced. We see by these purports, there's so much conviction of the simplicity of just bhakti yoga. And that is so many times referred to in the Bhagavatam. Vasudeva Bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita. That's the rest of that. Gana. What is it? Vairagya, renunciation, giving up attachment. Ragya means attachment. Vairagya. And jnana become automatically come when one renders service to the Vasudeva. Vasudeva Bhagavati. On to Vasudeva, who is the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the point. It's very simple. Simple for the simple and complex for the complex. So, materialists may ask us, we say always used to, how can you live without sex? In Israel, they say that people are always asking that. And sometimes the devotees start to think, yeah, how can I live without it? That's a fact. But it's easy when one is absorbed a little bit in Krishna, when you know you're not the body. And actually these karmis, they're suffering so much because of their sense gratification. That's why they're asking. They want to know. The devotees are famous. You know, you don't eat meat, you don't have sex. How do they do it? One guy asked me once, he was studying Kung Fu or something, and he was going to take a very advanced... And the teacher said, you have to be celibate for 6 months in order to master this. And he said, I couldn't do it. How do you guys do it? How do you do it? That I tried and I couldn't do it. So they want to know, actually, how can you live without sense gratification? Because some intelligent people are realizing that there was verses earlier from the fifth canto that this sense gratification is the cause of the body. And the body is the cause of all the suffering. But somehow the propaganda is, by Maya, that by sense gratification you can relieve your suffering. So you may forget your suffering for a little while if you get intoxicated, become unconscious in some so-called love making, or, you know, you eat so much meat that you poison your system and you can't think about anything. All your energy is absorbed in digestion. So they may think for a short time, oh, I've been relieved of my suffering, scratching the itch. But then it just gets worse. And on top of that, they're producing another body, which as much as we have sense gratification in this body, then the next body will be, you know, more bad, more miserable. So they're foolish. They don't know. They're crazy. Mada. They're intoxicated. John Maheshvarya, Shuti and Srivir by their birth, and their opulence, and their learning, and their beauty. People are just bewildered. And Heda Mana, Dakuma. So they cannot chant with feeling when they're bewildered like this. When they think, I've got it made, I'm enjoying this world, I have a great birth, a great country. Everyone thinks that. And the devotees went to Siberia where it's 60 below zero. The people were saying, this is the best place in the world, you know. Not so hot here. This is the best place to live. So naturally, you have to think like that. Maya has to make you like whatever you have. But now most people, they're getting so much propaganda that you can enjoy more somewhere else. Like Americans, they move constantly. They're always, you know, they never find people a year later. They're always moving here and there, trying to find a better job or a better house or a better... something or another wife or another husband or whatever it is. is so agitated, can't sit still. So we have to give them this holy name. We have to show them the Harinam Sankirtan. When they see that, everyone becomes affected. Everyone becomes enlivened. When they see the devotees, they never forget the entertaining factor. When Lord Chaitanya was dancing, people liked it. And Prabhupada was dancing, and we were dancing. And chanting the holy name, it's good exercise, and it's not only material, it's good material exercise. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj calls it Krishna aerobics, dancing and arti. Sometimes we see devotees standing in artik and like they're at a funeral, and then they go out for aerobic class afterwards. I've seen. And they work like anything for 2 hours. But if we just go on our nam, then we not only exercise our body, but we purify our own consciousness and please Lord Chaitanya, and this is how you force other people to hear the holy name. You just chant in public, and then people hear it, and then they can't help but start chanting, start remembering it, and then gradually everyone is chanting. Any question or comment?
Yeah. I remember when we were in Lebanon. Yeah, we were in Beirut, and it was right in the middle of the kind of Muslim-Christian fighting and stuff, and we were arrested by the PLO. So the head guy pulled us into his room, one of these kind of colonels.
Oddly.
So we got in the room, he was asking us, what are we doing? And I told him what we're doing, we're giving out Prabhupada's books, and we had the Gita. So he asked, what is the principles behind it? He was interested, and I said, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, no illicit sex. And no sex. So he was fascinated. So I said, you mean you don't have sex? And I said, yeah, we don't have any sex. So he pointed to all his guerrillas. They were sitting against the wall with machine guns in them.
Yeah.
So now you train these men. He said, you train them. Get them to give up intoxication, gambling, you make them like this, he said, then we can kill lots of Israelis.
They have to stop being gorillas and stop being humans.
I understand they become more powerful.
Yeah, you can understand.
You know, like athletes when they're in training, they give up their big, big athletes. But usually once they finish the match, then they try to enjoy. Any other question? Yeah. You got your hand?
Oh, yeah. You were mentioning about Harinam and how it's the Yuga Dharma. Harinam is the Yuga Dharma and Lord Chaitanya.
Right.
And I just wondered that
Krishna.
It seems like we don't seem to be doing so much Harinam these days.
It seems like.
Here
it's
we
more
go.
Than it seems like it is.
Yeah, we only go out once a week here
in many
every
places.
Saturday. And I just wondered why that is.
I don't know exactly why. But what is
I asked Prabhupada about that on a morning walk one morning. I said, sure, Prabhupada, we seem to be emphasizing more and more book distribution. And in those days, we used to go out for like 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day.
Right, and
so I said, Prabhupada, should we cut back on Harinam and do concentrate more on book distribution? Prabhupada said, no, side by side.
Yeah, he said that in America also. When the Radha Damodar party, they were having big Harinam festivals and also book distribution, and someone was saying they should do much more book distribution, that the Harinam is less important, and there was a lot of propaganda, and then Prabhupada said, no, side by side. The Harinam is our best PR. People worry about PR and everything, but if we do it nicely, it's certainly, people in New York, they still remember, devotees used to do 8 or 9 hours a day. So many people say, where have you guys been? Where are you? We never see you anymore. And they, you know, they like it. And still when they go in New York, everybody comes and starts dancing and chanting. And, you know, everybody gets right into it. People are going, yeah, you know. And so it can be done. It doesn't have to be 100 devotees either. It can be in Japan sometimes 2 devotees. The first Harinam party I saw was 1 devotee. And I joined right away. I said, that's what I want. And I came by in the afternoon and there was another devotee, 1 devotee. Then I was really impressed because they had a completely different style and it was like, I could see, wow, these guys are really into it, whatever it is. And, you know, that was it. I was completely convinced by seeing 1 devotee playing the conference. So, you know, that's what we can do. So why, I don't know, you know, this is, we become complacent. We're more into book distribution, but then we see the book distribution kind of fizzle out too, and we get more into being old and thinking Harinam is for the new devotees. And so many things. Anyway, whatever, we should be more. The more the better. Because if people, you know, everywhere I've seen Harinam, people love it. And it makes them, you know, they buy it. Well, the more we do Harinam in Japan, it's much better for book distribution, that's for sure. Because if people think, oh yeah, you're those guys who are singing and dancing, they're good people, you know. Great. Everybody's thinking, yeah, they're really nice, they're entertaining everybody. They may not know what's really going on, but they're being entertained. And the devotees become purified and free from so many problems by chanting more and more. The more we chant, the more, you know, that's our whole medicine. So our whole process is supposed, the goal is supposed to be chanting, so we have to practice. Not like we can just go on working in an office our whole life and then never chant, you know. We have to do both. And bringing people in, is that's what attracts people, that's it. In the Radha Damodar time, like, you know, Vishnu John would come and they'd have these huge kirtans and then the people, I want to join that, you know, I want to go with them. And so many people were joining. There was teamwork, you know, heavy talks, but without the kirtan was attracting him. And keeping the devotees so in line. Harinam Sankirtan. You're doing Harinam festivals.